Hello everyone, and welcome to our cast and crew Q&A. My name is Lena, and today I have for you an interview with Kerr Avon. Kerr Avon voices Pippa for the Crown of Thorns project, and has been reading fanfiction since the mid-90s with Blake 7, writing it since 2007 with SGA, and participating in it since 2012 with Avengers. Having first read Good Omens in June 2014, her first Good Omens podfic was recorded in July. She read Crown of Thorns and loved it, delighting every time there was a new chapter notification in her inbox. Previously, she recorded two standalone chapters from Crown of Thorns, Cards Against Humanity, and is looking forward to hearing those in multi-voice formats. In real life, she's a small-town general surgeon who doesn't have nearly enough time to do all the reading, writing, and recording that she'd like, and therefore is looking forward to eventual retirement, like Pippa has done. Kerr Avon, it's an honor to have you with us today. Tell us a bit about yourself before we start. Where are you from, and what do you do aside from fandom?
Well, actually, the bio you just read covers it pretty well. I forgot I'd written that. I'm a surgeon. I am in a small town on the Pacific coast of California, and it's a critical access hospital, which is 25 beds. There are two general surgeons in town, myself and one other, and we split call for the ER and the hospital and do surgery things.
Save lives. No big deal.
Occasionally. It's more like we do a lot of hernias and colonoscopies and gallbladder surgery and colon cancers, right, and breast cancers and things like that.
Right. Well, that's still saving lives.
That is, ultimately.
Well, then hopefully it's some good time and then retirement.
Yeah. When I retire, I've got so much stuff I want to do.
I can only imagine. So take us back. How did you land in fandom?
My first real fandom was Blake 7 back in the 90s. I graduated my residency in 92. So up until that point in time, I was pretty much focused on just becoming a surgeon. And then I started being able to watch a little television from time to time. And my husband saw this show that he just knew I was going to love. And I'm doing dishes. I'm doing this. Finally, I watched an episode and adored it. So he got me the entire videotape, VHS tape set of all four seasons of Blake 7, and lost me for about 6 months while I watched them over and over and over again. And then I hadn't gotten enough. I wanted more stories. And so if you know anything about Blake 7, it ends badly. But it's kind of very British. So, right. And I could explain that, but you'd have to call spoilers or something. But at any rate, I just adored it. And, but there weren't any more stories. And I was at a Doctor Who convention, and in the dealer's room found a fanzine, a paper fanzine, that was a crossover between Doctor Who and Blake 7. And, it had Kerr Avon getting on the TARDIS, I think. And I'd never heard of fan fiction before. So I bought that, and then I started. It had a publisher's address in the back, contacted them, got everything that they had on Blake 7. And after I'd finally bought everything this guy could sell me, his name was Hoop, Ed Hoop. He suggested that I go to a convention in Michigan called Media West, because apparently the Blake 7 fandom had sort of an unofficial pact that they would never put fiction online. It would be in zines only. So to get used zines, I had to go to Media West. And after the first one, I went every year up until this one for 22 years. 18 years.
When did you first go?
I first went probably about 95 or 96.
That would be 24 years, because that's how old I am.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Media West, because fandom has gone more and more and more online, Media West got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And the last few years has been pretty much just a convention where old friends kind of get together for Memorial Day weekend. And so not so much the, you know, maybe one or two zines a year would come out. And they would always premiere at Media West. It used to be this huge thing, all these zines and, you know, the premiering zines, and they had awards called Fan Q Awards. And
wow,
it's just, you know, people who've only seen it online don't really have the experience of the, you know, oh my God, the new zine's in the mail. And, you know, you just have to devote hours to, I'll only read for an hour and then I have to put it down, sort of thing.
Right. And did they ever move online at all?
Yeah, there's some like 7 on AO3 now. Because zines aren't really a thing. But no. I'm certain I don't own all of them, but I'll bet I own 90% of like 7 print zines that are out there.
Wow. So. Well, that's all right. You are very focused then on Blake's.
Yeah, I get focused easily. It's I got fanatical about it. I really, really loved it. Several conventions that had Blake 7 actors. Occasionally it'd be a Blake 7 convention, but in general it would be Blake 7 plus other things, because it was a fairly, you know, cult fandom. There were a small group of people that were in it.
Right. So, but eventually anyway. You started getting into other fandoms, right?
Oh yeah, because there's, you know, after a while, actually what happened was I ran out of actual Blake 7 zines to buy, so I started buying multimedia zines, you know, that have stories from lots of different fandoms. And so I'd start reading other stories, particularly if they were by authors that I really, really loved reading. One in particular was Sheila Paulson, and I loved her Blake 7 stuff. And she mostly at the time was writing stories, and she's got hundreds of stories in the real Ghostbuster fandom. That the real Ghostbusters was a cartoon series based on the original Ghostbuster movie. And J. Michael Straczynski did several of the episodes, you know, so they were very, very good. And he's the guy who did Babylon 5. And so I started reading real Ghostbusters. Didn't write in it or get into it like I had Blake 7, but that got me into other fandoms. So,
And how do you, because I imagine you remember the switch from, you know, zines and all of that in paper zines into posting mostly everything online. Whereas I barely remember that at all. I grew up with everything being online. So how was that for you?
More convenient, but I do kind of miss the excitement of getting a new zine in the mail. That was like getting a Christmas present or something.
Gosh, I can't imagine. And I'm here like, oh, I got an email. I'll read that later.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine. It's interesting for sure. So, you joined the Crown of Thorns, not the Crown of Thorns, sorry, the Good Omens fandom, around 2014, right?
Right.
You read the book. How was the fandom like at the time?
Full of wonderful people, wonderful writers. I've noticed that the fan fiction has changed quite a bit now that you've got real faces to put with the, you know, with the characters. The older stories have a lot more plot in general. You know, obviously there are exceptions to that, but they tended to be longer and more plotty, and less sort of PWPs.
Right.
So yeah, Not that there's anything wrong with PWPs. I just like having an actual story to read. And that's the, you know, the nice thing about AO3 is the fact that things tend to be, you've got better writing. You don't have people who don't know grammar for the most part. Right. Like you do over on fanfiction.net, you know, the 12-year-olds who get, you know, offended if you try to correct their spelling or their grammar, which you just don't do. And,
aren't there, in AO3, aren't there, like, as many younger people, do you think?
Well, probably, but they can write. They, you know, there's really, really horrible spelling and grammar errors, you know, like, obviously those would be the stories you don't read, but I just don't see that often on 803. I don't know if it's just because of the search engines and I just happen to search out the better ones, or I can't remember the last time I ran into something on 803 that was very, very, very badly written from a construction point of view, you know,
right.
the you know, the homophones is what's driving me crazy now.
The definitely and defiantly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He peeked in the window, P-E-A-K. He passed me in the hall, P-A-S-T. And my most recent favorite, he clambered to his feet. C-L-A-M-O-R-E-D. So he got to his feet very noisily, I suppose.
Yeah, I've never seen that one.
I've seen it twice. Actually, I saw it twice in the same week. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah. I guess those will exist forever. I do remember seeing a lot more grammar and, like, obviously this is not your first language stories in fanfiction.net, but I do think that's mostly because I've, lately at least, been in fandoms where the fandom is more adult, so there are a lot less kids, but I think that's my particular, like, fandom niche, because there are less kids. Then again, I don't know.
That could be it, because I like kids' cartoons frequently. And I like reading stories based around them. So I will get a lot more children. I've actually found that people who, you know, their first language is not English and they're writing in English. And that's the nice thing about AO3. You can write in another language. I don't know if you can do that in FFNet or not, but you can write in another language and just post it in your other language, which is great.
Yeah, no, totally. I started writing in fanfiction.net, and when I first started writing in English, like, I would go there and be like, hey, this is not my first language, just so you guys know, like, if there is wrong grammar, it's because I'm Spanish.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I don't know. It was something you could do back then, too, in fanfiction.net.
You could write in Spanish?
Yeah, for sure. I started writing in Spanish, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know if that was, if FFNet took other languages or not, because I moved over to AO3 almost as soon as it opened up.
It took me a while. I didn't even know it was a thing until way, way later on.
I may be misremembering, but I was thinking that when AO3 first opened up, you either had to be invited by an author who was already on the site, or you had to submit 3 samples of your writing, because they were really trying to screen out people who were, you know, misspelling things and couldn't put a sentence together to save their souls, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, that sounds strange, considering the archive right now is all about
absolutely,
and everything.
Well, maybe they had a smaller server then or something.
Maybe, yeah, or maybe So when I joined, I know that you had to either have an invitation from someone or wait until the archive gave you an invitation, because it's a beta right now, a beta website. Uh-huh. But they never asked for proof that you could write. But I remember hearing that this was because they were avoiding bots creating, like, spam accounts. Like, not so much people uh-huh. who couldn't write, but, like, bots, actual bots trying to become spam.
that makes a lot more sense.
I think that was it. Yeah. Because I wouldn't be able to submit anything.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
So I think that would be it. So I guess this answers a bit my next question, but you have written fig before, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm better at writing than I am at podficking.
Right. Because you have been doing it for longer or because you enjoy it more?
Oh, I've been writing since I was a little girl. If I had any way of making a living at it, I probably wouldn't give up surgery. That's a long, hard slug. I probably, right. You know, as much as I say I'm going to retire, when the pandemic first hit the United States, the American College of Surgeons basically said, shut it down, shut it all down as far as elective surgeries went, because we were going to save all the PPE for anybody dealing with COVID patients, you know, and there still is a very limited supply, and but not so limited we can't go back to doing, you know, elective surgery. And, you know, the definition of elective was pretty interesting. But there for about 6 months, we were doing essentially either emergency life-saving surgeries or cancer surgeries only, pretty much exclusively. And I missed it. So I'm not sure about the retiring thing.
Well, it's something you get used to, I guess, working a job. Yeah.
Well, I got a good another 10 years before I even have to think about it, so.
For sure. I think what I was going to ask is whether you'd done any visual art or any other kind of creative endeavors in fandom before.
I can draw a gallbladder. Sort of in a sort of a sketch so that I can show how the gallbladder attaches to the duodenum and the liver. And where the pancreas is in relationship to that. And that's about it for my drawing ability. My sister got all the drawing ability in my family. She is brilliant. She's very good at painting and drawing. And if it's a visual art, she can do it.
Oh God. So that's a mood. Actually, I can copy a drawing from someone else. I cannot draw like form myself to save a life. Probably.
Yeah. Me neither.
So, when you told us it was around 2012, I believe, that you started recording Podfic, mm-hmm. Yeah, with Avengers. Do you remember when you found out it was a thing people were doing, recording Podfic?
It was about the same time. It was probably a little bit earlier in the year. I started listening to some Avengers Podfic and just found it brilliant. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if I could do that. And so there was forums, and there's even Podfic, at least, yeah, at the time, I assume they're still out there, that tells you how to do Podfic. So yeah. You know, all about Audacity and, you know, and then a lot of it. Now I go to YouTube when I have a question about my Audacity and just watch somebody, they'll show you which buttons to move and right. To make the effect you want.
Which is very useful indeed. And yep. Do you remember what you like thinking that it was weird or that it like did it surprise you that people had started to do that?
Not really. If the programming is out there that you can, you know, to let you do it and it's free and it's decent, everybody's going to do that sort of thing, you know, or at least give it a try.
And have you, since you started making any podfics, have you interacted a lot with the podfic community, or have you mostly kept to yourself?
Well, mostly I end up keeping to myself simply because I don't have time. I keep missing that. I keep wanting to come to the voice chats for Crown of Thorns, for example, and I keep missing them because I find out about them after the fact.
That happens, yeah.
Yeah, I check my email about once a week, so I was checking it more often when I was trying to get in contact with you and volunteer and for the interview, because I wanted to do this. I've been listening to these interviews and they're brilliant because I get to learn about the other people that a lot of times I've listened to other podfics by these people. And it's just, right. It's so neat to know more about them and where they're at and, you know, that.
Yeah.
That kind
we
of
have
thing.
A lot of different people.
Yeah. And from all over the world, you know, Australia, you said you were from Spain.
Yeah. Bunch of people from France. A lot of people from the States. Yep.
Yeah, right now the U.S. has...
Hello, Editant Lena here. Small technical difficulty, but Kara Avon was talking here about how a lot of people have free time right now in the U.S., so you can put in context the rest of the conversation. Back to the interview.
Not so much me right
now. Not so much you.
No. But, one thing I do in my office is cut off little skin lesions that might or might not be skin cancers and send them to the pathologist, that kind of thing. And people are sitting at home staring at their, you know, new little freckle that they never noticed before and gradually convincing themselves that it's malignant melanoma. And next thing you know, they're in my office getting their freckle off. And I can't convince them it's just freckles. So I have to take it off and send it to the pathologist.
Yeah, well, that happens. If you have a lot of time, you start noticing new things.
Yeah, I need to socially distance from my refrigerator.
Yeah. But no, I mean, your job is, like, really important right now in general. Every single person just still working and medicine is a godsend. I know Botfix, our narrator, is working in pharmacy?
Yeah, she's a pharmacist.
Yeah, she's a pharmacist. So, yeah. Kudos to all of you, really.
Well, as a surgeon, I don't do a whole lot with the COVID patients. And honestly, there's not a whole lot in our town right now. We did have an outbreak in the nursing home. I'm not really sure why nursing homes keep getting hit. It's kind of weird. But we did have an outbreak in the nursing home, and then it was over. And other than tourists coming to town and
right.
You know, bringing in the occasional little, you know, isolated island of cases, we pretty much don't have much.
Oh, well, that's a relief then.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll, yeah, I'm sure it'll hit, but it, as soon as somebody comes in with, and it's always a tourist who's refusing to wear a mask because somehow wearing a mask is political.
Somehow.
I'm not sure how that works because it seems to me it's more science. But at any rate, they'll come in into town, they'll refuse to wear their masks, they'll, you know, be a carrier or something. And the local community is really, really good at the contact tracing. They just shut everything, you know, like if this person stays at a hotel, the hotel owner will shut down the hotel. Get every, you know, everybody gets screened who's been staying at the hotel. They sanitize everything before they reopen. They're just, you know, people are absolutely rabid about making sure our little community stays safe. And I think that's one of the nice things about a small town is it tends to, you know, everybody pitches in and does what needs to be done to keep us safe.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's one of the benefits for sure. To steer us back into the interview, because I think we've strayed a little bit.
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry.
So
this happens
sorry.
A lot.
Yes.
No, I mean, this happens a lot. And like we were saying, we have a lot of different people and everyone has different things in their minds and in their circumstances. And it's fine to talk about this kind of thing, I think.
But podfic.
Yeah. Podfic is also kind of important here. Related to the question that we were talking about podfic and how long you've been doing this, we had a question on Instagram from Tired But Still Kicking, who asked you, what is your favorite part about doing podfics and what are some of the challenges of doing so?
Favorite part of doing the podfics is the first read, you know, the first read aloud that I do. The unpleasant part is the subsequent editing, because I will get more and more obsessive about something to the point where sometimes I will edit out my breathing. I will find where I take a deep breath and I will make it go away. And by taking a little piece of blank, you don't silence it. You take a little piece of blank air from somewhere else and stick it in over the breath and in exactly the same amount of space. And then I will edit it. And then I will listen to it on a walk when I try to get out and exercise. And then I will write little notes to myself. Okay, you need to fix this, 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 and this. And now that I have a good place to record, I will re-record lines and stick them in if I don't like the way it sounded the first time. And that just takes forever.
Right. Yeah, very extensive editing then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And more specifically to Chrono Thorns, do you remember how you found it?
Probably, I tend to rank things by kudos in the, when I'm doing my searches through AO3, and probably that way. It was probably a fic with 16 zillion kudos, and so I started reading it, and I think it was only maybe 25 or 30 chapters in when I first started reading it. I'm not sure. I know they hadn't gotten to the Cards Against Humanity sections, because those, as soon as I read those, it's like, they came out several months apart, but the first one that came out with Cards Against Humanity, it's like, oh, I have got to record that. And it was lots of fun to record.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you find out about the Putrama?
I probably saw a notice somewhere. I actually don't remember.
Mm-hmm. When you auditioned, did you have a character in mind that you wanted to play?
Pippa. Absolutely Pippa. Yes.
From the beginning.
And it was the only other character I thought I could potentially do would be her grandson, Rob. But Pippa had about the right number of lines for me, and I certainly did not want to be narrator Crowley or Aziraphale. Kudos to those guys, because, oh my heavens, that's just a huge time commitment. And I would have failed everybody if I'd tried to do any of those. But Pippa feels like me. She's a retiree. She's kind of the nosy next door neighbor. She knows everything about everybody in town. She's everybody's friend. I mean, I love her. She's a wonderful character.
What is it like being her when you're recording her lines and being Pippa?
Well, I try to actually tone down my voice a little bit and try to sound a little bit older and a little bit more nosy. people tend to volunteer a lot more information than I want to know, so I'm less nosy than Pippa. But I just think friendly, curious neighbor who's in her, 70s. And then that's Pippa.
Yeah. I think you just described it perfectly, because I was going to ask you to describe her, but yeah, that's pretty much her. So what is your favorite part of being a voice actress for the project?
Getting to hear the brilliant way all of it gets put together, that still floors me. Whoever's the people doing the editing, oh my heavens, I wouldn't have volunteered for that either. it's brilliant. They do such a great job, and it's so much fun to hear my voice in with everybody else's as if I'm having a conversation.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's one of the best parts about multi-voices in general. I can't really imagine. I know I've contributed a small role, but it's still so shocking sometimes to hear it and be like, that sounds good. Like, it sounds really good.
Right.
But the editing team is doing a great job. And then, of course, there's Rhee as head editor.
Yes.
Yes. So tell us, what is one thing about Pippa that you identify with?
I don't know, being old. I feel old sometimes. I think we all do. beyond that, I'm not really sure. I'm not retired yet. Maybe she's more what I'm aspiring to be rather than what I am. She's what I want to be 10 years from now. I want to be, you know, retired and checking in on my neighbors and baking. I like baking. Can't cook for anything, but I can bake. And, you know, maybe being in the local drama club or here they're called the Footlighters. Little towns everywhere have these little drama clubs. And in our town, they're called the Footlighters. You know, doing things that I've been putting off all these years.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think. I want to be Pippa. I don't really associate with her now, but she's what I aspire to.
Right. And is there any other character, canon or general character, that you feel like you identify more with right now?
Well, there was a doctor when Pippa's husband died. I don't know. Of the canon characters, I like Aziraphale simply. I mean, if you were to, you know, look at where I'm recording right now, I'm recording in my library, which, yeah, Aziraphale would like this place. I love books. I keep books forever. I read them and read them and read them and read them. And so in that way, I like Aziraphale. I don't really connect with Crowley at all. Not a big fan of driving fast. Do you watch movies at all?
No, I'm not a big fan of movies. More of a serious person.
Okay. There's a movie out there, one of those multiple car race movies that Americans love so much. You know, illegal car race movies like Smoking the Bandit sort of thing, called Need for Speed. And it's some sort of, I think, cross-country race. But the last scene where they're racing to the lighthouse, and you can go to YouTube and Google Need for Speed Lighthouse Leg or Final Leg or something like that, was filmed where I live.
Oh, wow.
The curves are like 20-mile-an-hour curves, and people take them at 45 to 50. So, and I am not a fan. I have to take nausea medicine before we call it going over the hill, because there's a series of mountains between us and, like, society. the nearest shopping mall is 2.5 hours away. The nearest airport's 4.5 hours away. And so we're in the middle of nowhere. It's called the Lost Coast. And yeah, those roads, just no. I'm not going to connect with Crowley on the driving. Absolutely not.
That's a cool name though, the Lost Coast. Sounds like a book name or a place where you would expect to have a treasure map.
it feels like that sort of place. I had no idea that places like this existed in California. We're in Northern California, and just about an hour north of here, on some even twistier roads, is Humboldt State Park, which is where they filmed the Ewok planet, you know, on the third Star Wars movie with all those giant trees. Did you see any of the Star Wars movies?
Or? I saw the Star Wars movies when I was a kid. I barely remember it, but I'm very sure that a lot of our listeners will know that scene.
Well, yeah, that's just north of here. I've got giant redwoods in my backyard, literally.
Wow.
It's just astounding. I had no idea this place, places like this existed in California. When I think of California, I think of LA, you know, just wall-to-wall people and cars and, you know, smog and noise and, this is beautiful. Trees and deer. There's deer that wander across the hospital parking lot at night.
Oh.
Raccoons come and steal our cat's food at night. We have to bring our cats in from the yard at night so they don't get eaten by the mountain lion. I am actually not joking. We'll find a deer carcass on the property every once in a while because the mountain lions come through and killed a baby deer. And yeah, we're out in the woods.
A mountain lion.
Yeah, they come through in the spring and the fall, and they will eat your little dog or little cat for lunch. Actually, it's more of a snack. So yeah, you bring them in at night. Dusk and dawn are the worst. So you make sure they're in.
But is it like a lynx or like a fox or?
No, it's a mountain lion.
Oh, just okay.
We have some bobcats. There's a family of bobcats that live full time about 3 blocks from here. There's a little ravine that goes into something called McCarricker State Park. There's a family of bobcats that live right on the edge of that ravine on a farm that's just a few blocks away. But they're mountain lions. They're lone animals. They don't travel in groups. They travel by themselves, and they have a big area that they travel over. Mm-hmm. And they seem to come through in the spring and the fall. So yeah, and they eat things like cats. So our cats come in, and then the raccoons come and eat their food. So.
Well, the circle of life.
Yes.
That's interesting. I don't think I've heard of mountain lions, or maybe I'm not thinking.
Mountain lion, puma. They look sort of like a female African lion, but smaller than that. Like a panther, but tan, like a female mountain or like a female lion.
Interesting.
You'll have to look it up.
I will.
They're called mountain lions. They're bigger than bobcats or lynx.
Fair enough. Well, if I remember, I'll try to put a picture on the transcript for this interview. Someone is just as uneducated as me in Californian wildlife.
There you go.
Because I'd never heard of them. Interesting.
Yeah, I know. They have different names. I think puma is one name for them.
I've heard of pumas, yes.
Yeah.
Might be the same thing.
I think it's the same thing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's the same thing.
Fair enough. All right, so let's pull back to the interview. We have a final question for you.
Okay.
What is something that you've learned during this project?
To check my email every once in a while and check the COT, schedule every once in a while, because I'll think in my head, I'll record when I have a few hours, I'll record several chapters at once and submit them, and then think, oh, I'm good to mid-August, and maybe I'm actually not. So I have to check it frequently because I was late once, and I was just like, no, I can't be late. Learning to recheck myself when I think I don't have a deadline due, to make sure that I don't have a deadline due. Because people are depending on you. They you've got to try to get things in on time.
Yeah. That's something I hear a lot through the interviews, is people just constantly realizing how important the organization we've got going on is.
It is astounding. I will show people at work the spreadsheet, and how the links are arranged, and I can't even, that's just amazing. I don't know how anybody can do that. And it stayed on track all this time. The chapters come out just like clockwork. They're perfect. It's just such a huge coordination effort. That's just amazing to me. I would not have believed this sort of thing was even possible.
True. I don't know if any other podfix of this length and caliber have been done, in terms of multi-voice especially, because if you're doing this as a single person, it will take you forever, but you're not waiting on other people and making sure that everyone is doing everything on time. This is a project. I don't know if it's happening in other fandoms. I would be interested to know, actually, if it's happening somewhere else.
I would bet money the answer is no. I would go to Vegas, you know, with a N95 mask and put $1,000 down and on no. I think this is probably the first this sort of thing has ever been done. And it really looks like it's going to finish, which is even more astounding to me because 75 chapters? Really? Holy Toledo. So,
75 plus epilogue.
Yeah. I mean, this is kudos to, you know, the voice acting is easy compared to the organizing of this stuff. Except for Crowley, the narrator, and Asira Rail. I think they probably got their work. Yeah, they're probably just as hard as the organization, but organizing it.
I think the organization was, the worst part of organization was probably at the beginning, just sort of deciding how it was going to be done. After that, being part, for example, of the team that organizes all of the posting on social media, after it was decided how it was going to happen, it's mostly just doing it.
Well, it's, I was so impressed with this whole, you know, I'd never been on Discord before. And and I was just so impressed with how all this was coming together that when my hospital was looking for ways of doing virtual meetings and, you know, committee meetings and that sort of thing, I suggested Discord because it's like, I'm already on Discord and it works really good. But they went with Zoom. Aww. It really does. Yeah, they went with Zoom. Nobody wanted Discord, so I guess they didn't like the name.
Fair enough. I suggested Discord to my dad, who's a university teacher, and they didn't use it at first because they have they use Teams, I believe. But for one of his classes, they need like a more informal sort of way to contact the students, and they have set up a Discord server, I believe.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's one way of doing things. Discord is helping a lot with fandom organization in general, not just podfic. I've also seen most fanfic events, like Big Bangs or like Fandom Week events. They also have their own Discord for people to connect. It's really interesting.
I've got some YouTube channels that I actually like to, you know, watch videos or whatever, and they'll have a Discord channel. I've frequently found, and so I've subscribed to those.
Yeah, that's true. YouTubers are making their own Discords for their fans. That's true.
Exactly.
Yeah, wonder where this is going to take us. But for now, this is all we had. So thank you very much for talking with us, Caravan. Tell us, where can people find you online?
I'm under either Curavon or B7_Curavon or B7 stands for Blake 7, so B7-Curavon. I think the B7-Curavon is my fanfiction.net one. And on AO3, I think it's just Curavon, but pretty much some sort of permutation of Curavon. there's, because of the fandom, there used to be a lot more Curavons out there, you know, with various prefixes or suffixes, and not so much anymore. People have changed to new names and that kind of thing. But, what I wrote most in was Stargate Atlantis, and I'm actually pretty proud of a lot of those stories. Although the only story I've ever gotten written, you know, an award for writing was a, Psych, the old, I don't know if you ever saw that show, but there's a show called Psych, and I actually got a something pineapple award for that. Psych, if you ever get a chance to watch it, it's fun. It's a guy who was trained to be very observant, you know, like Sherlock Holmes observant by his father from the time he was a little boy, and his father was a bit of a and he convinces the local police department he's psychic rather than very, very good at observing things. and they hire him as their psychic, and he keeps solving their cases for them. So it's a fun show.
We'll also have links to your social media on the transcript of this interview in case people listening want to check that out.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
You're welcome. See, I told you I could talk forever.
It's all right.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. So, this was all we had for today. Next time, we'll be talking to Akima, one of our artists, so keep your ears ready for that. Thank you.